Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Somebody sent this to me, and I'm going to ask Steve Templeton about it a little bit this afternoon. There is a, because we don't see that very much in the St. Louis area, there's a fire watch until 6 p.m. Wednesday. This is from the St. Louis County, Missouri Office of Emergency Management. The National Weather Service has issued a fire weather watch for wind and low relative humidity, which is in effect for Wednesday afternoon. I think this is in effect specifically for the area surrounding my house, because I like to burn in the fire pit. But I might have to get that in tonight. Yeah, but Steve says, yeah, because of the lower humidity, you don't have it very often, but gusty winds, it's been dry and very low humidity. That makes it very comfortable outside, which is where we're at right now. We'll get the complete forecast details as we get into Total Information PM a little bit later. Hey, we got a football game tonight, an NFL football game, because of COVID. Two undefeated teams. Josh Allen, my fantasy quarterback, who needs to do well for me to win my first fantasy game. My team is just terrible. And the Tennessee Titans tonight, so that'll be fun. Ryan Recker's with me this afternoon. You hear him on Overnight America on KMOX. And I remember several months ago, in fact, it was probably before all this craziness happened with the pandemic, he told me that he was working on some pretty cool projects behind the scenes about KMOX history. So Ryan's joining me this afternoon, a little preview of something he put together about Ann Keefe, one of the former hosts of KMOX. How are you, Ryan?
Hello, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
So Ann was here at KMOX from what period? Refresh our memories.
So roughly 1976, Ann Keefe already worked in radio and television in Rochester, New York for nearly 30 years. And she was really starting the second leg of her career when she came to KMOX 1976, retired right around 1993, but then stayed in the area, was doing Donnybrook on television and some other things, various around the community.
So what have you put together here tonight?
Tonight is a part one of a radio documentary I put on her legacy, or life, her memories, things that people will remember, and probably things that people had no idea that Ann Keefe was a part of. Altogether, the radio documentary comes out to 3 hours, so I'm going to air the first 2 hours tonight on my show between 9 and 11 tonight, and then tomorrow night I'm going to air the third hour plus a bonus hour, which is an hour of her and her co-host Bruce Bradley from 1990 to get a full scope of what she would sound like on any given day during her radio program. It was just really, really awesome.
And you, I remember you talked to me, I think you talked to me about Ann. Did you end up talking to people who knew her or had some, you know, because I didn't know her very well. I will share one story here. I don't know what you included in the program.
I ended up talking to many different people. I tried to pull different interviews that may have been archived or saved from her, because she passed just a few years ago. But your portion where you talked to her, I believe it was in an airport, where she gave you some great words of advice. That's part of her personality. She gave advice to so many different people over the years. So when we sat down and I was just kind of getting an overview of some of your KMOX history, and we talked about Ann Keefe, yes, that part is a portion of the documentary later tonight.
So I'll share that story just briefly. I remember, and this would have been probably circa 88, 89, I was an airplane, I believe, to California to see my friend, and I refer to my friend Rick a lot. He and I started radio here. He lives in Las Vegas. I'm actually going out there again next weekend. But I was very frustrated back in that period. I was doing music radio, Ryan, making probably $16,500 a year. Meantime, my friend who was in California lived in you know, beautiful Redondo Beach. He was pulling down, God knows, maybe even six figures at that point. I'm thinking, I'm toiling in radio. I'll never be able to afford food or anything. So I happened to recognize Ann because, you know, she was a recognizable figure even at that time. And I was seated right next to her on the airplane, just coincidentally. Introduced myself, told her what I did. And I said, look, you know, here's one of the struggles I have right now. I really want to do this, but I can't afford to eat. And she wrote out, this is weird how memory, you know, comes back to you. She wrote out this little graph on a piece of paper. She said, look, here's where you are right now. She kind of put my salary down there really low on the graph. And then she put the other point high on the graph, you know, for where my friend was. And then there was a higher point on the graph. And she said this, she said, look, you're right here. Your friend is right here, but you have the potential in this business, if you really work hard at it, to get here. And her point was even beyond where my, you know, where my friend was. If you really be honest about it, Ryan, you can make, you know, seven figures and beyond in media. Some people have done that. I haven't been quite that lucky, but you know, you can reach that pinnacle if you want. But this was the most important thing she said. And this is what stuck with me, not about the money or anything like that. She said, in the meantime, when you're not making that much money, you're having a whole hell of a lot more fun than your friend. And you know what? That stuck with me, and she was right. And I guess the lesson of that story is it's not always about money. You have to find your passion and what you enjoy doing. And that was what her lesson sort of, I guess I knew that at the time. I guess a lot of us knew that. But it was awesome to hear that advice from her when I was probably 23, 24 years old at the time.
Wow. How lucky is that to randomly be seated next to an Ann Keefe when you're looking for advice in radio? It doesn't get any luckier than that. But she was actually at a crossroads somewhat when she was offered this job at KMOX, because she was in the area. She was actually going to be interviewing for a television position in Kansas City when Robert Hyland knew she was going to be traveling through, and she was staying with some nuns here in St. Louis. And all of a sudden she gets a ring from Robert Hyland in 1976 that says, I want to talk to you. And she didn't know who Robert Hyland was. She didn't know what KMOX was all about. And she didn't even know radio that well. It was just something she did before television came around. I mean, that's how long she was in the business at that point. So she sits down and they start talking, and she's so impressed by Robert Hyland. And she says, you can't afford me anyway. Talking to Robert Hyland, who basically had a blank check from CBS Radio. And he said, you'd be surprised. And ultimately, all things worked out. She ended up doing probably her best work in all of her career right here in St. Louis. And we were lucky enough to share all of that, which is all part of the documentary tonight.
You know, I think I told you that one of the things that annoys me quite a bit, and it's just like my pet peeve with listeners when they say something to me like, if Bob Hyland were around, he'd be rolling in his grave. Well, look, people forget that Ann Keefe and Bruce Bradley, they had very sharp opinions, and you know, it wasn't all milk toast 30 years ago on KMOX. The media landscape was so different. I don't know if you sort of touch on this at all, but it's real easy to say, KMOX isn't what it used to be, when KMOX was dominating the media landscape, not only here in St. Louis, but across the Midwest. You didn't have cable competition. You didn't have really any other AM competition. You didn't have any FM competition. So that's where people had to turn to get their information. A pretty simple example of this is school closings. You know, we used to read them. I was in the Pease, the Parkway District, and I would have to wait for, Bill and Wendy, whoever the anchors were at the time, read me the school closings. And, you know, you waited for the P and then you celebrated. But it was just a different media landscape. And I don't know if you sort of get into that particular aspect of it or not.
I think you get a feel for it. When you start to understand why she was special and what really made her the unique broadcaster that she was, I think you start to see it's pretty evident there. But what you're basically describing is it could be a whole nother documentary on its own, because so much has changed in the industry. And even for her sake, some of the opinions that they bring out and the way that they present the opinions on air, I listen back to some of these shows, and I'm just so blown away of how conversational and personal it was. And I thought, you could do this today, but you can't do that for a lot of other radio shows. I don't know if you go back in the archives and you listen to some shows, and some are good and some are terrible. She holds up. And I think part of it is just because she was one of those pure broadcasters, one of those real people, one of those down-to-earth, I'm just going to tell it like it is type of people. And there's something magical about that. And there's something that stays throughout the course of time with you when there's a personality like that.
What was her original background? Did she have a news background?
She did a few things. So she originally was in radio. So this is before really television was starting to pop up in all these different markets. So she was working at a radio station and she was doing all kinds of things with them. And because of her radio background, the company, when they expanded into television, they were looking for people with experience. And she said, you know, I can give that a try. She did a couple of other things like, you know, some like the kids games and stuff. But really when they expanded to start doing local news in Rochester, New York, she had news background. She had the ability to do that. So she would kind of, it was almost experimental in a way because the early years of television and news are nothing compared to what it is today. But when she did that, that was kind of groundbreaking, not only for the area to be one of the first, but for a female to do it. You didn't see a lot of female anchors. So originally radio, went into television, almost 30 years doing that. And it was actually a dispute with the television station with a strike. She was the head of the union there that she was the lead of. And because of it, it kind of soured her relationship with the television station and led her to start looking at opportunities at other places, which ultimately ended up KMOX.
KMOX documentarian Ryan Recker with us this afternoon. Something tells me there's not going to be somebody in 30 years, you know, a young new upstart budding Ryan Recker when Ryan's, you know, I'm long gone. Ryan's doing some other show. And then they're doing documentaries. I don't think I'm going to get one, Recker. I just have this feeling.
So
if I do, yeah, I know. Well, you know, maybe we can clip this portion of it. We'll save the archive audio where I say, Mark Reardon thought he would never get a KMOX documentary. He was wrong. Tonight, we take a look back
right now
at that idiot Mark Reardon on KMOX who made Bob Hyland roll around in his grave. Ryan, when does it air tonight?
So part one is tonight from 9 until 11. Tomorrow night, part two is from also 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock. And I'm really looking forward to having everyone enjoy it tonight.
Can't wait. We'll tune in. Ryan Recker with us this afternoon. 316 at the Voice of St. Louis. The real estate market in St. Louis continues to be interesting in many good ways, challenging in others. Mark Gelman with the Gelman Group. Coming up.
You're listening to The Mark Reardon Show.
When you're out of my sight, you must constantly Twitter me exactly what you're up to.
Follow Mark on Twitter at Mark Reardon, KMOX.
Our house is a very, very, very fine house.
Theme music this afternoon for the real estate market. And, you know, I think it's, I'm glad I have a house. I'm glad I have a house I love. And I don't have to move because I think it's tricky, although we're going to try to navigate those waters this afternoon. My realtor, I talk about him all the time, great sponsor of the program, Mark Gelman from the Gelman team with me. I always like to get an update on what's happening. He's on the Quiver River Electric guest line. Gelman, what's up this afternoon?
How are you, buddy? You may want to sell. It's a great seller's market right now. You may have a little weakness in inventory on the buy side, but we'll get your home sold today.
I have, you know my neighborhood because you helped me buy this house, and it's very rare, but there's a home on the market down the block, and there's another one coming soon, but I would fully anticipate, because you know this neighborhood, they're not going to last very long, are they?
They're not. I mean, it's interesting. They're, you know, we're seeing just such a strong market right now, and we'll go through a few of the numbers, but absolutely there's still a weakness in inventory. The thing that's going to happen, though, this year that we believe that we haven't seen in the past is late inventory. So, you know, traditionally the spring market's in March, and then it goes through September back to school, and then people start taking their homes off the market if they don't sell. Now, you know, we've always been a proponent, even in November, December, if the home's on the market, there is a market for it. But we believe there'll be more inventory this year than last year in November, just because everything got delayed a few months.
So I keep hearing, you and I have talked about this both privately and on the air. I talk to friends who have looked for homes and bought homes. So I think I told you about my friend Luke years ago. This was back maybe even the summer that we bought our house, maybe even before that, where he bought a house in Creve Coeur, not too far from Creve Coeur Park. Mark, he was a cycling friend of mine. And he didn't see that house. He bought it sight unseen. I told him, I said, dude, you are out of your mind crazy. Well, more and more people are doing that now. In fact, it's become almost commonplace in some of the price points, hasn't it?
Absolutely. Now, keep in mind, this has been done on the East and West Coast for years. So my colleagues who are the best of the best in New York and in Miami Beach and other in California, they've been selling to out of the country individuals for years via, you know, FaceTime, via Skype and other. So we absolutely have been doing this under tight deadlines where individuals did not want to come, couldn't even fly to St. Louis, didn't want to fly to St. Louis. And so we've sold multiple homes this year, and I don't think they have the exact count, but I'd say at least 15 or more where the individuals never saw the home except at closing. You can get a good feel not by pictures. So when you look on the internet, the best features of some of these houses are the photographer, but we're talking about when we go and video a home and they ask, let me see the closet, let me see this, you know, and so the specifics can really be identified by video and other. So it's being done all over right now.
What's keeping the prices so high? Obviously, that's a basic economic question. That's, you know, the supply and demand. But in the back of my mind, I still can't help but think that, some of this is artificial. So talk me off the ledge there, because obviously, if you're selling your house, you're going to probably get a good price for it. If you're buying a home, you're going to pay for it on the other end. But is this going to sustain itself right now?
Sure. So I ran some numbers in advance of coming on. Sales prices in St. Louis County, St. Charles County are up about 11 to 12%. So sales prices are up and sales units are actually down. St. Charles County, they're down over 11%, which is a huge number because of all the new construction. So resales are down even significantly more. And the reason they're down is not because of the market. It is there is no inventory. So in St. Louis County, we're seeing them down 6, 7%. And it's very consistent in Jefferson, northern Jefferson County. So with that being said, I mean, what is it is absolutely supply and demand. There is significantly far greater the demand than supply. Our supply is much weaker than it was last year. And so with that combination, now, even consistent with last year's inventory, we would actually have some less increase in prices. Prices are still going up because interest rates are so low. So you have people's buying powers are so much greater this year also. So it's a combination. I mean, it's a really, we talked, I remember right when COVID started, we talked about, and we were all really nervous, what's going to happen with housing?
Yes.
What's going to happen with housing? And we said, well, unlike 2000, you know, when the crash 8, 7, 8, 9, where there was over a year of inventory, there's less than 2 months of inventory now. So even if there's a, you know, even election wise, things could happen, COVID and the, you know, winter could come. But even with all these factors, there's such a weakness in inventory that we're not overly concerned about it. Now, if you're a buyer, there may be concerns of overpaying right
yeah.
now and not being able to, you know, recover that.
Yeah. So how do you determine the pain point on that? Because some people are going to say, look, I hear these stories, 10 grand over asking or whatever. Maybe that's not an uncomfortable, you know, situation, but there's going to be a pain point for some people. And then you're in risky territory.
Absolutely. Now, the other thing to consider is somebody that has a budget of $500,000 that finds an incredible home at $400,000, they have a higher tolerance level to pay $450,000 than the individual that has a top budget of $425,000 that may either be priced out of the market. So I think everyone's really, every scenario is different. I will tell you, we are very transparent with our buyers, telling them, hey, we think you're going to have to overpay to get this. We think that it may not be worth it. But remember, at the end of the day, these are, you know, not every house and shouldn't be bought as an investment. If you want to buy an investment,
hey,
multifamily
yeah.
and others, but to actually, you know, a single family residence isn't always an investment.
So, Mark, is there a difference right now in any of this from, let me just break down a couple of price points. So let's say from 250 to 500, from 500 to, you know, a million, from a million to 1.5. Are there, you know, usually the market acts differently. A few years ago, houses were selling like crazy, except if you got over 750, it was a little different. Are these houses selling at all price points and prices are staying high in all price points, or is there a bit of a narrowness there?
Sure. And so we break down the market even further because we're breaking it down by location, by area and other. But overall,
sure,
there
right.
is significant consistency. Now, again, the market in the 150 to 300 is far outperforming the 500. But and then way outperformed the 500, outperforming the million. But let me just tell you that a great home prepared for sale, and when I'm talking about prepared for sale, no wild butts, no deferred maintenance and other, and it's marketed the highest level, I would expect anywhere between a million and a half down is going to sell. If priced right, marketed the highest level, it will sell, and it will sell in a timely manner. We're seeing homes sell in 25 days, 30 days. So some clients may ask, well, what if I overprice the home? Well, our concern of overpricing is when you overprice too much, it sits on the market. The market will recognize a well-priced home, and they will actually bid it over asking. An overpriced, grossly overpriced home that a buyer thinks there's negotiating room or seller thinks there's negotiating room actually may sit. And then the questions become, well, why is that home still on the market? Right, the ones down the street from you, if they're on the market in 150 days, your question is going to be, what's wrong with them? It could have been that they just started too high.
Yeah. Well, and I saw an example of a house like that started too high, and then the the decor was very different, we'll just say, and that was, I think, keeping buyers away. Mark Gelman, the Gelman Team, you can find out more at thegelmanteam.com. You can hear the passion and the energy. Gelman, great to talk with you. Keep us posted on everything. I know you're busy. Appreciate it.
Can't wait to play cribbage with you, buddy.
Yes, he can. Well, he plays with my wife, and my wife
exactly.
Beats him. Yes, I'm not as skilled as Becky, and Mark is very competitive. 3:30, let's get to the news this afternoon.
News Radio 1120, KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
I just got to give some props this afternoon. Klein, did you see this? Somebody asked this question. You know, this is kind of a bad story. Tommy Pham was stabbed the other night. He's doing okay. So there's a story now. San Diego Union Tribune says Padres say Tommy Pham is in good condition. And somebody tweeted out, isn't this the second time he's been the victim of a stabbing? And Cam Jansen came in with a line on Twitter of the day, maybe of the week. He said, first time at a strip club, though. Boom!
Wow.
I don't know.
That's a good one.
I just thought that was a good one. I like that. I like Cam, too. I miss him. We're not talking hockey as much, but that was a good line. Okay, well, I've been trying to keep track of all this Apple stuff this afternoon, but I don't have to do it anymore because Ian Scheer from CNET is here, and I'm a Apple and a Mac guy. I know a lot of people are. Sometimes these events are, this one seemed to be rather substantive today. Ian, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I hope you're doing well as well.
Yeah, doing pretty good. So what did we find out today?
Yeah, it was an interesting event. The biggest thing that stood out to me was that Apple announced this fourth new iPhone that they showed up. So, a couple of years ago, they started offering two iPhones instead of one. The larger one that was called the Max or the Plus. And then they started offering three iPhones last year, right? And we had the iPhone 11, the 11 Pro, the 11 Pro Max. Now we have four. And the new one is a smaller one called the Mini, and it is now the entry-level iPhone. But what's interesting is that aside from that, a lot of what they did is that they offered new technologies in the phones that are across the line, like 5G wireless, which is supposed to be super fast, more reliable, all that stuff. And they offered, I think, a really interesting feature. They have hardened glass on the front of this thing so that hopefully they're less likely to crack and scratch.
So, I see the price points here, too, because there's all kinds of phones. There's like the iPhone, the R, the 11, the 12, the 12 Pro. And are they lowering the price points on some of the phones and maybe even on the iPhone 12 Pro? Because I thought the 11 Pro Max was higher than that.
No. So the prices for the iPhone 12 haven't really changed from the 11. Even though there's a fourth new phone, it really hasn't changed. Instead, what's happened is that they're still selling last year's iPhone for $100 less. Again, pretty standard. But this year they also came out with that iPhone SE. You may remember back in April, I think it was. And that is actually a pretty high-end phone. It's using all of last year's parts, but in a phone design that comes from a few years ago. It doesn't have the face unlock and stuff like that. And that starts at $399. So far, indications we've seen are that it's incredibly popular. We at CNET called it the best value, bang for the buck that you could get from Apple. And it shows that Apple kind of sees they need to have a lineup for this recession, right? $399 They've got a phone for $5.99. They've got a phone for $6.99, and on and on and on. So they're kind of hitting people at every level if they can.
Let's talk about 5G just a little bit, because, you know, one of the things I think I realized after I got my iPhone 11 Pro Max is that it's not equipped for 5G. You know, you hear about 5G, I see the commercials right now, but if you don't have one of these newer phones that they're just rolling out, you won't have 5G. Now, do I really care about that right now? Because when I'm streaming, now I don't sit around and watch television shows on my phone, and if I do, it would be on Wi-Fi. Why do I care about 5G, and how important is that right now?
Well, for most people, it's really hard to care about it, and I think that's an important thing to keep in mind. Most of us are stuck at home, right, or we're not going out a lot, and so the idea of, you know, super fast wireless doesn't matter as much because most of us are near Wi-Fi a lot. But the idea of 5G is that it's supposed to be much faster, much more reliable. It's supposed to be able to, for example, download an entire TV series inside of a couple of minutes. And it's supposed to, you know, one of their ads from Apple, they show someone buying a song, a bunch of songs, right, a whole album, and they download the whole thing in between a foot tap, right, as they're listening to the song. So it's that type of thing where it's super fast, but you don't really need it right now. One of the challenges that the companies have had is that while 5G is compelling, it's something that people don't seem to fully understand. In fact, there are surveys out there that show a lot of people, including iPhone owners, actually think they have 5G already. And part of that is thanks to AT&T putting 5GE on a lot of phones. Which they got sued over, by the way.
Commercials,
so,
too.
You know. But
See how that would be confusing to people, because that was why I was confused originally, you know, because it says 5G. And then even now, I think they've kind of doubled down just a little bit, because they have the commercials that say we have 5G, which factually is correct. But if you have a commercial that says we have 5G, but your device doesn't have it, then that's a little misleading.
Yeah, no, I think there's a trend of when you're wrong, just double down more, which is not cool. But at the end of the day, the technology marches forward. This 5G stuff will eventually be in all of our phones, even if you don't upgrade this year. But I think what's going to be interesting is that, unlike in previous years, where when we upgraded to 4G, 3G eventually was phased out and 2G went away, well, this time around, 4G is a critical component of 5G. If you leave a major city, you're going to likely be on 4G wireless. So all the phones that are coming out today will do both, which means that if you have a 4G phone, you don't want to upgrade this year, you're probably good to wait it out. You know, it's not going to be bad for you. And Apple's phones are still performing. Last year's phone is still performing better than most of the new phones that come out from competitors. So,
Yeah, right. Well, that's good advice. All right, anything outside of iPhone here? There were a couple of things that I think that some of you folks who watch these events were expecting, like maybe a bit of an Apple TV hardware refresh and things like that didn't pan out. Anything else that did happen or did not happen?
Yeah, you know, I think what's interesting is that this year Apple, because of the coronavirus, all of the manufacturing is all up in the air. And as a result, everyone's release schedules have kind of gone out the window. And Apple usually has one big event, maybe two, for the holiday shopping season. It looks like this year they're going to have three. And a lot of it probably is related to when they can get these devices out the door in time. So, you know, last week we had the iPad event with the Apple Watch. Not last week, last month. This month we've got the iPhones. And also, they announced a new HomePod. That's their wireless. That's their speaker that works with Apple Music, and it has Siri and all that. It's supposed to compete with the Amazon Echo and the Google Mini, but so far our reviewers say it's not as good. And then you've got next month is likely going to be when we get the new Apple computers. Maybe we'll get the new Apple TV, stuff like that. So it's going to be a very interesting holiday shopping season, I think.
You know what's interesting, too, when it comes to shopping? Let me offer this advice, and you might remember this from the spring. So I decided in the spring that I wanted to get the iPad that I had. My daughter had sort of taken over. We had an iPad mini. I wasn't using it. Hadn't used an iPad in a while. I really liked what I was seeing. My colleague Jane had an iPad Pro, so I bought an iPad Pro, but it was difficult to do that. I mean, it was hard just to get it delivered, and I was going, you know, through Apple, and it was going to be like 3 weeks, and then I tried Best Buy. Anyway, finally came up with a model that, you know, got delivered relatively quickly. Well, here I am again. My MacBook's running out of memory. I need a new MacBook. Haven't had one in a while. If I go to the Apple site, not going to get delivered for about 2.5-3 weeks. I'm the type of person who wants it when I buy it. This seems ridiculous that you can't even go to a Mac store. They want to sell us computers. You can't order something on their site without a long wait period. How does that business model work?
Well, it's not just Apple. It's everybody. Like I said, the coronavirus has really upended manufacturing. And on top of that, we all are working from home. Well, a lot of us are, not everybody. And as a result, and people are learning from home as well. And as a result, a lot of people need new computers, right? So it's caused a huge spike in demand that the analysts out there say will likely not go away for a few months still. And as a result, it's incredibly hard to get a laptop or a tablet. And it's really caused a lot of trouble for everybody. But, you know, all the companies, and I talk to all of them, Apple, I talk to Microsoft, I talk to Dell, all of them say they're making them as fast as they can. It's just that things are moving slower because of this pandemic.
Ian Scherer from CNET, always appreciated. Good stuff this afternoon. Thank you, Ian. We'll have you back soon.
Absolutely. Take care.
3:46 at the Voice of St. Louis. Audio cut of the day and traffic coming up next.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
All right. Audio cut of the day is sponsored by the Good Feet Store. Pain relief and comfort to fit any budget. This is really kind of a crazy story. And we're going to, I don't often do this. This is a TV station out in Utah with the details of this guy who is being tracked by a cougar on a trail. It is amazing. Kind of must listen to radio and TV.
This is a very popular loop.
It's not exactly a secret to trail runner Kyle Burgess.
We're not alone out there.
So, of course, he took out his phone when he happened onto a cute little cougar kitten on the trail. But things changed fast.
I was like, oh, that's mom right there. I'm screwed.
But face to face with the business end of an angry mountain lion, Kyle kept his cool, backing away slowly as the animal followed him for 6 agonizing minutes. A tip he got online.
Do watch a lot of YouTube videos, just kind of like, what's it do when you encounter some type of aggressive animal like that?
So if you watch the video, and I put it up on Twitter yesterday, the guy, you know, I was a little suspicious because I thought, well, is this guy holding some bait in his hand? Is he doing this for attention? But he's also, you can tell there's fear in his voice. Did he do the right thing? Because they say there's signs in Colorado, people have seen this if you've been out there, actually, make yourself look bigger than a bear if a bear comes at you. Good luck with that. But apparently he did the right thing. Listen to this.
DNR spokesperson Scott Root was impressed with Kyle's composure.
No, go away.
Just perfect. And those are the important steps to take.
In the moment, though, Kyle wasn't sure if the plan would work.
No.
That's like, I was like, wow, this is happening. Holy crap.
What do you want me to do?
Kyle stayed tall and made loud noises. Also, textbook safety tips. 6 minutes in, he finally threw a rock and the cat gave up. Kyle's shaken, but okay.
Like, this is not our home. This is their home.
Kyle is not ready to give up trail running. He's back at it already.
I love going on the trail. It's not going to stop me.
A little context that was missing. I had to look into this. I didn't know originally. But originally what happened is he's on this trail, and he's using his cell phone, and he sees young cats, bobcats, he thinks, but they're baby cougars. Mama comes down to the path. Mama was protecting babies. That's what it was all about. So it wasn't just like rabid cougar. Interesting video. I could not speak to whether or not Kyle had any liquid at the bottom of his gravel path at the end of all this, because I think a lot of people would have. 3:56, that's your audio cut of the day on KMOX.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.